IndieCan Music presents the Toronto Indie Scene with your hosts, Joe Chisholm and Andre Skinner, bringing you an hour of Toronto's best new music and a look behind the scenes with industry insiders and artists.
This week's industry insider is writer Cameron Gordon. But first, from London, Ontario, Antihero.
Two words, I'm sorry. That won't make me forget. 4 years of bullshit, but still I'll never regret. So many misconceptions, and still so many lies. I have lived on with my sister. Why can't she just get alright? 2 months of anguish, I felt like I was dead.
Give up.
seat. Let's get started with some questions. So how did Antihero come to be? What were the origins?
It's partially responsible for me and Rose. I kind of started the whole thing. I wanted to put a band together with Rose. We had both had some falling aparts. So the short version is I kind of found her, and I met Nicole on a separate occasion at a Marilyn Manson concert, and we auditioned for Maddie, and we kind of got it all together, and magic happened.
So haven't looked back since.
The story is not true that they found me on the side of the road.
And when did that all come about? What year?
It was about 2 years ago.
Yeah, something like that. Well, the idea was probably about 3 years ago, but it only actually happened probably about 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm. 2003, 2004.
And who participates in the songwriting process, and how does that come down when you go from writing a song to going to the studio with it?
Basically, what happens is I put together the structure, the chords, the melody, just basic chord progressions, put together this the structure of the song, bring it to Jesse, who spices up the guitar with his awesome lead guitar skills. Then we bring it to Nick and Matt. They both add their two cents, and it becomes an Antihero song. And we rock it out for a couple weeks, and then, you know, really start getting into the flavor of it, and it becomes a song.
Good, so you're the riffer.
Well, I suppose.
You're the official riffer. Now, did you just say who writes the lyrics?
I do.
You write the lyrics?
Yes.
Nice.
Well, I think it would kind of be odd if I was singing somebody else's words, you know? Like, how can you get emotional about something that you didn't write yourself?
Faking it.
We actually tried that before. It didn't go over too well, where I had songs that I had written that I got her to sing, and she just hated it.
Couldn't own them.
No, it didn't work for me. So I'd like to write about issues that I feel are important to me, and obviously, you know, I feel important to society in general, you know, so obviously I can get into my lyrics and my words the best.
Yeah, you don't have a hard time getting political when it comes to your songs, do you?
I'm not very political at all. Jesse's the political one of the band. I'm more into social issues.
Well, political, social issues.
I guess they run together.
It's a very thin line.
Yeah, for sure.
But if there's any political that comes through, I would definitely say that probably comes from me, whether it be accidental or intentional.
But we don't write love songs.
Good for
you. Or ex-boyfriend I hate you songs, because those are stupid and cliche, and all female fronted bands do them, and we don't want to be just another cliche female fronted band.
All right, so influences. What are your main influences?
We're
Let's
all going to have to go
Nick.
Separate.
Well, my favorite band in the whole world is Pantera. I like Slayer, In Flames, Sepultura, a lot of
right
heavy metal.
Nice. Are you going to go to the Sounds of the Underground?
No, I don't have enough money. I just went and saw Rob Zombie, so
yeah, I'm a little broke too. But I really want to go see that Sounds of the Underground. It looks awesome. I want to see Cannibal Corpse live.
Yeah.
Then I rose. I listen to a lot of classic rock, like Aerosmith and AC/DC, that kind of stuff. But I also like a fair amount of punk and some good 90s grunge rock, like The Pumpkins. Rook Assault's my all-time favorite band. Most people don't give them the credit that they deserve, but I think they're amazing. If it wasn't for them, I would not be here today.
And what are you fighting this stuff in the CD player, Jesse?
I'm all about electronic industrial kind of heavier stuff, but definitely with a mainstream rock and roll edge, stuff like Marilyn Manson, Nine Inch Nails. I'm eagerly anticipating the new Tool album. I can't wait to hear that, stuff like that. Static X, obviously, I'm wearing the shirt.
What about you?
Better.
Come up to the mic.
Fighting over the CD selection is very common. For me, that's Korn, Pantera, Slayer, Cannibal Corpse, same heavy.
Vinnie Paul,
man, right?
I got to interview him.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, he was like a big friggin' highlight of my life.
Oh man, that'd be sweet.
Yeah, so he's the nicest guy in the world too.
Neil Peart, Lars, just.
You forgot anyone, your favorite of all.
Anyone that's close to the wall, like, just go.
Good stuff.
Who?
Well, hello.
Look at your shirt.
Yeah, Black Label for sure.
But to be honest, most of us really can't agree on music. Maddie and Nicole have some similarities there, but I hate their music. I hate Jesse's music.
We got Rose to listen to Pantera.
It was awful.
For the first time.
Nice.
I just about jumped out of the car.
Well, it's great to have different influences. It really makes the the whole greater than the sum of the parts
to a band. It creates a lot more diversity in the songwriting, and it definitely, when we're putting together a song, you can hear that everybody is coming from such a different place, and so it creates songs that have structure and have little fills and add-ins there that I don't think you typically hear in mainstream kind of rock and roll, and that's what we like about our music. You know, we're trying to push forward with what we feel is something original and cool.
Well put. We're going to get back to the music with Antihero.
Here you go. This is the first track off of our debut album, Unpretty. It's called Not Good Enough.
We'll be right back. So where did that song come from?
Actually, I was really inspired because I had a really horrible job, and basically that was my way of getting back at my boss. What happens usually is my inspiration comes when I'm pissed off about something, which I know sounds really odd, but...
Writers always get in the last word.
Yeah.
Never during the argument,
exactly.
Always months later. But they get the last word.
It's kind of funny because I think that writers actually run away from confrontation and then express it through their lyrics. And it's kind of the coward's way out in a way because you can't rebut. But
excuse me!
Obviously, I wouldn't have a career otherwise. So
I don't consider it cowardly at all. It's not that I would not go up to the people who piss me off and tell them off. It's just...
Oh, you would.
I definitely would. Nicole can pledge for that, okay? I am queen bitch and I'm proud of it. But the point is that with, you know, when it comes to dealing with emotions, I really find a catharsis in writing. And for me, it's really, really easy, I guess, to put my feelings into words and then rock out. And it really helps me get over whatever I'm experiencing at that time. So basically, I was having a lot of problems with my boss at work. It was a huge, just ridiculous situation. I was the assistant manager at Randy River.
Yeehaw.
Yeah. Well, I'm back in school now, thank God.
Right. Nick, what would your favorite anti-hero song be, and why?
Well, so by far?
Yeah.
So far, not including on the album? We have new ones that we're working on, and a couple of those would have to be my favorite, but I don't want to spill the beans yet because we're still promoting this album, and it still kicks ass.
How about you, Maddie? What's your favorite anti-hero song?
Lost by far. Easy. Lost, because it's all toms, it's all fast. I can just get lost. Literally.
It's your show-off tune.
Yeah, exactly. Perfect. So I'm always changing the fills and just going crazy in it, so Lost.
Now, if I'm correct, you used Rob Sanzo as a producer on your album, is that right?
Yes, he did an amazing job. Like, it sounds exactly how we wanted it to. Really raw, no stupid effects on the vocals or the guitars, making it sound, you know, 80s and synth pop. Because we didn't want to come across as just, you know, a pop rock kind of band. We're a hard-hitting, hard rock band, and we wanted that to be apparent in our album. And so, you know, we sat there the whole time throughout the mastering and the mixing process, just be like, you're not putting effects on that, okay? We don't want that. That's not what we're going through.
Hour after hour.
Yeah, it was such a long process, but he did a great job, and we're definitely going to go back to him again. Like, he rocks. I recommend him to anyone. Yeah, for sure. I recommend him to anybody who likes hard rock and roll. That's what they write. They want a great album, go to Sanzo.
He did you justice. Your album sounds awesome.
Thank you.
Sounds really great.
Yeah, thanks.
What about some career highlights so far?
Playing Warped Tour last year.
Nice.
Yeah.
Very nice.
That was awesome. We got to play on an all-girl stage, like all female-fronted bands and all-girl bands, called the Shira Girl Stage, and that was really cool just to, you know, play with so many other chicks who wanted to rock out, basically. You know, it's really cool seeing all those other women out there trying to pursue music.
It must have been tough on Jesse and Maddie to have to endure that too. Right?
Yeah, you know, Warped Tour with all the bikinis and the butts.
Yeah, all those lovely women. It was torture.
Right at the main entrance, so everyone had to walk past us. Yeah, it was pretty tough.
They hated it every second.
Which
Molson Park.
Molson Park, right?
Yeah,
right.
Definitely a highlight.
Yeah,
same
for
with
sure.
The Hard Rock Cafe for me playing there.
And now, were you on a stage with a big crowd
at the Warped Tour or
yeah.
Hard Rock?
Warped Tour.
Warped Tour, yeah.
Nice.
Yeah,
it's hard to not get a big crowd at Warped Tour.
It's a Warped Tour.
Like I said, we're right at the main entrance, and we were 12:20, right when the gates open, so everyone's just piling in. And
wicked.
Yeah.
Everyone's
yeah.
stopping by and checking.
Tell us about your record deal. You're pretty excited about it. Are you distributed now? Can fans find you at Sam's or HMV yet?
Well, okay, there's a bit of an issue with the distribution. It's not going to actually take effect until July because we're going on a U.S. tour, so they want to coordinate it with when we come back to Canada, obviously. But when we do come back to Canada, we will have Canadian distribution in all the major record stores, and as well, we're going to have global internet distribution. So we're going to be on like all those awesome programs like iTunes. You can download our music for like a phone ringtone and stuff, so... We're very excited about it. It's cool. It will allow us to reach, you know, obviously a larger audience.
Mm. Who's taking care of the booking?
I do.
Me. You do it all?
I do.
Nice.
I hate
it.
I absolutely hate doing it, but I do it.
Someone's going to do it. You're doing a good job because you guys are busy as hell. I printed off your schedule here and it looks pretty hairy.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah,
well, for sure.
She lies. She loves it.
Tell me. Tell me about... right here. Tell me about Patman.
Patman's over on the corner. He's hiding out.
You're hiding out? You don't want to say a few words?
Got nothing to say.
Got nothing to say?
Patman's shy.
He's all about images.
Why don't you guys tell us a little bit about Patman?
Patman likes Jägermeister.
So do I.
Oh, we got a compilation CD for you.
Patman is a guy who's kind of, I guess, followed us to all kinds of different shows, and I guess he's a glorified stalker, really.
He's our number one fan.
Yeah, we love him, so we take him all over the place, and he exchanges us with good pictures and, you know, good times.
Enjoyment.
He's got sensational
every
breasts.
Every indie band should have a Patman.
Exactly.
Yeah. Let's hear it for Patman.
Thank you.
All right, here we go.
Splish splash, I was having a bath. Okay, is everybody ready?
We'll be right back. This is Cameron Gordon, and I hear it first on the Toronto Indie Scene.
Going up every time you hit down. guess we'll see you around, 'cause we had so much fun. Well, I have been told. Well, I have been warned. I can't walk this line, not anymore. Well, everyone knows an easy fix. Well, once a day, well, you can swallow for this. I'm slow to trust, because I have been burned. Almost left to death, my lesson learned. Well, that was always up the end of my head. I do not want it to go away. I
shortage of chick bands on this show, I'll tell you. That band was called Modern Boys, Modern Girls, with a tune called Edge of My Blade. They're fellow MySpacers of Indie Can, and really cool stuff there. I like it.
That was great, wasn't it?
Yeah,
before
I love it.
That was Fresh Meat, a Jägermeister band, and that was a pretty hot tune called The Runs.
The Runs. I get some bad visuals right there.
Thank God this is radio.
Yeah, and you can't smell it. Before that, a band that just sent us their stuff recently called No Days. And yeah, they're really great. That tune was called It's Over. Really heavy band, and they're produced by Hayden Neal, a.k.a. Jack Soul.
Okay, up next, seeing as how it's just us girls, something Andre and I put together. This is a little song I wrote for the Chronicles. It's an anthem for restless spirits intended to soothe tortured souls. It's called Chronic Malcontent.
Giddy up!
I'm not happy being me. I couldn't handle being you. Don't give me what I want, 'cause I won't know what to do. I'm a chronic malcontent. Said a chronic malcontent. You know, you might be heaven sent, but I'm a chronic malcontent. Yes, you want it a million. You're the belle of the ball. Yeah, you're the girl of my dreams, but you drive me off the wall. Don't change the things you say. It's not the things you do. Pardon the cliche, but it's just me, it's not you. So this is where it's at. It's a real hot spot.
I just can't stand the prospect of missing out on all the rest. They've got. I have my discontent, and I contend that that's a lot. You seem preoccupied, that I don't appear quite at ease. It's just the way I am, it's not a disease. I'm a chronic malcontent. Said a chronic malcontent. I'm not broken, I'm just bent. I'm a chronic. On Dr. Phil, when you start that psychobabble, I'm familiar with that drill. Am I trying to change you? Why try to fix me? Serenity makes me nuts, but I love calamity. I'm not happy being me.
I'm a chronic malcontent.
I couldn't handle being you.
I'm a chronic malcontent.
Can't pay attention all around.
I'm a chronic malcontent.
This ain't no loser's lament.
Content,
and I'm proud.
I'm a chronic malcontent.
That's why I sing it right out loud.
I'm a chronic malcontent.
And I know I'm not alone.
We're all chronic malcontent.
I'm not broken, I'm just bent.
I'm a chronic malcontent.
I'm a chronic, chronic, chronic supersonic. I'm a chronic, chronic, chronic malcontent.
Jesse Chisholm from the Chronicles, and I listen to Indie Can Radio.
Have you been running all your life? Will you ever settle down? No time for lovers or a wife. They just roam from town to town. Have you heard the cry of love? Does it chill you to the bone? Do you ever think about it? Do you leave well enough alone? And was there once a woman set your heart ablaze? Did she leave you for another? Were you left to fan the flames? Did you spin in circles? Drag your face along the wall? Does the memory stay with you? You screen love when it calls. And have you tried to settle and make a brand new start? Have you poured yourself an ugly and swallowed up your heart in the quiet moment? Let your walls down. Are they the only ones that hear? Do they help absorb the sound? seen you in the parlor. Raise your eyes from a beer. The body everyone walks by. Dog hungry for a bone. Yeah, the fool suffers gladly, left well enough alone. Yeah, the fool suffers gladly, left well enough alone.
That's Ben Shears with The Fool. Can never get too much of him. That was great. Our industry insider is a writer on the Toronto indie scene. As a matter of fact, Andre knows Cameron Gordon from The Spill magazine, and he's got numerous other credits. Take it from here, Andre.
In the studio today, as our industry insider, we have Cameron Gordon. Welcome to IndieCan Studios.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah. So you are a very busy writer. Tell us a little bit about your history writing in Toronto and around.
Okay, yeah, I've been doing the freelance writing thing for about, I guess on and off, about 4 or 5 years now. Before this, I mean, I've always been active into writing, but prior to that I did, you know, the campus radio thing, and going back even further, community access TV when I was in high school. So I've always been kind of interested in the music and kind of the independent arts. So yeah, right now I'm writing, as we were just discussing, for 5 different magazines currently. Some music, some not, and plus some other stuff on top of that, and working full time. So yeah, I'm pretty busy overall.
Your non-music writing at the moment, what does that consist of?
Mainly like some community newspaper stuff, just kind of oddball features, humor pieces. Actually, I write for Toronto Special magazine. I write a column called Off the Radar, where I track down old Toronto celebrities and that have disappeared.
And where are they now?
Where are they now, basically, yeah. So, I mean, the last column I did, Michael Williams, used to be the VJ on Much Music.
Mm-hmm.
I've track down Jesse and Gene, you might remember.
Oh, Q107.
Yeah,
and then Q107. They moved somewhere else and disappeared into obscurity.
Exactly.
The morning show guys.
I did those guys. Dick Smythe used to be
a radio guy.
Peter Ng, who used
to
be the
goalie. Hey, I was
just
about to say Peter Ng. That's hilarious. Okay.
Did you see it? Yeah.
So, no, I didn't see it, but I was going to say, like, where the hell did that guy go?
Yeah, he's actually a pit boss at Casino Niagara, which is just really, really strange. And I actually tried phoning up to talk to him, and I guess he gets a lot of calls from ex-hockey fans because they wouldn't connect me to him.
Really?
So, anyway.
Peter Ng.
Yeah.
That's so funny.
What is it about...
Go ahead. No, go ahead.
What is it about music that attracts you and keeps you stimulated?
I don't know. I mean, I like music because it's very fluid in both directions. I mean, there's always lots of new stuff coming out, which is always really exciting. But at the same time, there's a history of music, of stuff that you'll never listen to everything. So at any time, I mean, you can never really exhaust the supply of music. And I mean, there's a lot of crap out there. Everyone knows that. But there's so much stuff that you'll never get a chance to listen to that's probably brilliant. And I mean, just kind of the ability to explore and just kind of learn about it and learn about new styles and going through phases, and I don't know. I mean, the energy of it, the emotion, all the stuff. I mean, I don't play music, but it's probably the same reason that people who play guitar or play drums enjoy it. I just enjoy it from, I guess, a more outsider's perspective, and then writing about it and critiquing it on occasion. So,
and what genres are you drawn to, or what genres, you know, do you have no time for?
I don't know. As I near 30, I'm a bit less picky about what I used to like. I used to like pretty much strictly the indie rock and alternative rock of the day. This was like in the mid-90s when I first started getting into it. Like bands like Pavement and Dinosaur Jr. and the Pixies and Sonic Youth. Like when I was in high school, I would only listen to bands like that. like Beck and Sloan and whoever was popular. And then, I don't know, I kind of went through like the British invasion and garage stuff. And yeah, I mean, now if you look at my iTunes, it's pretty all over the map. Like I have like the Carpenters in there and like Bachman Turner Overdrive and like Luba. But then I also have the Arcade Fire and Block Party and all the hot bands. So I don't know. I'm too old to really discern about the different genres in terms of stuff that I probably wouldn't listen to. Is, I guess, like new country or anything. But I don't know. If people like it, that's fine. There's a place for everything, so I'm not going to split hairs about that sort of stuff at this point.
Have you ever had to review music that you just didn't know anything about or couldn't muster up any enthusiasm for?
Yes and no. I mean, I've done CD reviews and interviewed bands where I really don't know a lot about that type of music. But with anything, I think that's the challenge of the writer, to be able to find something to write about. And I mean, unless you're kind of like comatose or something, it's going to elicit some kind of emotion, even if it's like pure hatred. I mean, I think that's a lot better than just kind of ambivalence, which I've felt on a few occasions listening to certain CDs as well. So I mean, yeah, just really thinking about it and really thinking what it means, even if you think it's totally like loathsome stuff. I mean, just trying to find something interesting to say about it that maybe you don't think is going to be said anywhere else.
How have you seen the Toronto indie music scene evolve since you started writing?
Since I started writing?
Yeah.
Well, I don't know. When I really started doing it, it was right when it was really starting to pick up with, I guess it was like right around the time Ted's Wrecking Yard closed, which... Mm-hmm. I don't know, to me it almost seemed like a signifier that things were picking up again, or like when the Alma Combo closed, like stuff that happened in the late 1990s. And from there, like kind of the whole broken social scene thing happened, and then kind of they brought in all 20 other flagship bands from that. But then, I don't know, just seeing a lot of new venues. I mean, I think when Ted's Wrecking Yard and Alma Combo closed... when the Alma Combo closed for the first time, I guess. I mean, it was, to me anyway, it seemed pretty quiet. I don't think that was actually the case, but it seemed like a bit of a death blow. But since then, there's just so many new venues, and the ones that were there before are doing great as well. I mean...
It seems like since... I guess that would be a good marker from when Ted's Wrecking Yard closed, because it seems like things have gotten very commercial since then, and that Toronto seems to have a much bigger commercial appeal with their indie bands.
It does, yeah. I mean, they're really, since I've been really following music, there really hasn't been this many, like you said, commercially viable bands since, I mean, I would say the early 90s, when like the Bare Naked Ladies and the Lowest of the Low and whoever else, the Pursuit of Happiness and Blue Rodeo were going, but I don't know, like, they didn't really have kind of the hipster cachet that a lot of these bands, like, Toronto's never really been seen on a worldwide scale as being a really cutting-edge place, and now you have not only Broken Social Scene, but a band like Stars, I guess she doesn't live here anymore, but Feist, all those related bands, Metric, Death From Above, and then plus a band like the Constantines, who personally I think are better than any of those bands, and just really, really amazing. Deadly Snakes are doing great, and...
Yeah.
great band, like the Hidden Cameras are doing interesting stuff.
Magnetal and these Lane. Bands are worldwide, like,
yeah, totally.
You know, you got Danko Jones, that, you know, they were just touring around with Tricky Woo for a while on Sonic Onion, but you got bands like that now people all over the world are paying attention to.
Yeah,
and things are happening, they're playing in front of 10,000 people and just touring all over, and it's great. I think it's a good thing for Toronto.
Yeah, I mean, it is. I mean, you have a... It's all different genres, too. I mean, you have Danko Jones, which is pretty much, like, straight-up garage rock. But then you have, like, a band like Do Make Say Think, who are, like, doing kind of the instrumental math, more like the post-rock, for lack of a better term, thing. And they're doing great with it, too. And, I mean, the fact they are from Toronto seems to have cachet in 2006. I mean, I kind of thought the bubble was going to burst on this whole thing a few years ago, but it just keeps going, and there just seems to be more bands.
Yeah.
Would you dare predict what the next big thing or fad or phase is going to be in Toronto music?
That's a good question. I don't know. I mean, I don't think there's always been like kind of a like the metal and punk thing, like the more hardcore, but that's always been pretty constant. It's never really bubbled up unless like there's something like the Tall Dwarves or the Tall Dwarves, the Killer Dwarves going on, but I mean that was more kind of from the pop metal side. I don't know. I mean, like I said, there's just so many different styles, whether it's like post rock or garage or fake hip hop or noise or just totally eclectic stuff, and like you know there's all girl bands, there's stuff mixed with like hip hop and stuff. I don't know, there's not one kind of overriding style. It's not like in the 90s where like in the early 90s it was almost like Toronto was known for like joke rock kind of, because Bare Naked Ladies were kind of funny and Corky and the Juice Pigs were around, and I don't know, the Arrogant Worms and stuff. I mean, it was bands with silly names, some of which had silly songs. A lot of them weren't. Like, a band like the Rheostatics got lumped into that as well. And, I mean, they're very, very...
gimmick bands.
Yeah, the, well, like they got...
Moxie Furvis,
yeah,
Moxie
Furvis, exactly.
You know, with their a cappella act.
Yeah, so, I mean, that kind of became kind of an umbrella for the whole scene. But like I said, like a band like the Rheostatics or the Lowest of Low or Pursuit of Happiness, like, they weren't joke bands at all. Like, they'd... not just accomplished musicianship, but very well-written songs. And a band like the Rheostatics, probably like one of the most creative and ambitious Canadian bands of all time. And it's just a shame that kind of in the bigger public space, they're going to kind of be remembered in the context of jokey bands. Even the Bare Naked Ladies, like they're very good musically. I think they write some really great songs, like nice vocals and stuff. But people remember them for like Be My Yoko Ono, which is unfortunate, really. But... I don't know, a product of a time and place, again.
I think that they were one of the lucky bands that outgrew that scene. I mean, I believe it was 2001 or 2002 when they really exploded in the States, and none of them had known anything about that. So I guess, you know, they were saved by fame, in a way.
Well, they called themselves the Bare Naked Ladies. You know, that is right. Going to leave an impression, right? People are going to view you a certain way and have a certain expectation. Just from that band name.
But I mean, they were kind of weird because there was a time in the mid-90s when to admit you liked the Bare Naked Ladies. I mean, I was in high school at the time. So, I mean, that's kind of the pinnacle of like people being superficial and stuff. But to admit you liked that band was just pretty much the worst thing.
You'd be flogged publicly.
Yeah. And then...
You wouldn't see it in a stack of CDs with your 9-inch nails and your Marilyn Manson.
But I guess
Manson.
Once the Much More Music thing came out, that was perfect for them. Because, you know, they were definitely not for the demographic of teenagers.
Yeah.
Because it was like intelligent rock, quirky, you know, smart lyrics, smart music. But definitely wasn't a good a seller for the younger crowds who were into, you know, heavier stuff.
No, but it's true. I mean, I don't know when it happened, but kind of the whole... kind of adult alternative radio format really helped them, because you could hear them alongside Sheryl Crow and Dave Matthews Band and the less ska bass, like Smash Mouth tunes or whatever. And I mean, it sounded fine. I mean, they were better than a lot of those bands, and they still are. But I mean, but again, I don't know. It's kind of weird because they just went through such like a dark period where like no one would like them, and then kind of getting that acceptance in the States made it kind of okay to like them again.
Mm-hmm.
And then plus there are other bands kind of around the same ages. I guess they're a bit younger than the Blue Rodeos and the Tragically Hips, but those are kind of the bands kind of lumped together as now they're like the Elder Statesmen, which is kind of interesting because the Tragically Hip, when I was in high school, were a band that like 14 and 15 year olds, like not 35 year olds. So
yeah,
I guess that's just showing my age a bit.
Yeah, we just heard Cameron Gordon as our industry insider for this week. We're going to finish off this week's show with another live track from Antihero.
Many thanks to Maddie, Jesse, Nick and Rose from London for coming in to see us.
How's it going? We're Antihero and you're listening to More or Less.
Thank you.
Thanks for listening to the Toronto Indie Scene, an IndieCan Music production.
For more information on the artists featured on today's show, visit IndieCan.com.